Welcome to Simply Scottish. I'm your host, Andrew McDermott. On this episode, another installment of our new occasional series, Off the Shelf, where I feature books from my own Scottish library, as well as new and recent titles. From history and travel to fiction and poetry, I'll choose books of different types that all have one thing in common. They help to illuminate the country, culture, and people of Scotland. Today, we're looking at Edinburgh in its Golden Age by William K. Ritchie. This concise and highly readable little book brings you into the Edinburgh of the late 18th and early 19th centuries to explore the famous Old Town and the building of the New Town, plus fashion, food, and daily life of the people of Edinburgh at the time. Plus, we'll learn a little bit about the book's author. Right now, let's keep listening together to the rock Cayley band Chownich. From their second album, Energize, this is Chilled Maggie. You're listening to Simply Scottish, the long-running podcast of Scottish culture and music. Thanks so much for joining me today. If you enjoy the show, consider subscribing to our new Patreon channel. For the price of a coffee or two a month, you can help me produce more shows and reach more listeners. In return, you'll tap into an ever-growing collection of bonus content, including subscriber-only episodes, articles that I'll write, show notes, and more. Patreon.com/simplyscottish. And speaking of bonus episodes, if you enjoy today's second installment of Off the Shelf, you can hear the first episode in the series on our Patreon portal. Become a member today and get instant access. That's at patreon.com/simplyscottish. By the way, lately I've been communicating with a few other Scottish podcasters, and one of them, Dawn, hosts the true crime podcast Scottish Murders. She had the idea lately to come up with some collaboration. So a group of Scottish podcasts has been exchanging reviews, social posts, and content to show audiences what else is out there and support other Scottish-themed podcasts. Today I'm going to play for you a few short trailers as part of that collaboration. The first is from Scottish Murders, and the second promo is from Chat Tsunami, a variety podcast focused on gaming, film, anime, and general interests.
I'm Dawn.
And I'm Cole.
And Scottish Murders is a true crime podcast dedicated to people from or living in Scotland.
Just like anywhere else in the world, these murders can be truly horrific and shocking, and we want to shine more light upon them.
Join us every 2 weeks on Scottish Murders, where we'll bring you cases both solved and unsolved, giving you an insight into the other side of Bonnie Scotland.
Find us wherever you stream your podcasts, as well as on social media.
Join us there.
Bye.
Welcome to Chat Tsunami, a variety podcast that discusses topics from gaming and films to anime and general interests.
Previously on Chat Tsunami, we've analysed what makes a good horror game, conducted a retrospective on Pierce Brosnan's run as James Bond, and listened to us take deep dives into both the Sonic and Halo franchises.
Also, if you're an anime fan, then don't forget to check us out on our sub-series, Chat Tsunami, where we dive into the world of anime. So far, we've reviewed things like Death Note, Princess Mononoke, and the hit Beyblade series.
If that's sounds like your cup of tea, then you can check us out on Spotify, iTunes, and all good podcast apps.
As always, stay safe,
stay awesome, and most importantly,
stay hydrated.
All right, now let's get to what you joined me for today, another installment of Off the Shelf. For these episodes, I'm literally pulling books off my Scottish shelves, many I've had for more than two decades, and highlighting some of the best and some of my favourites. I'll also be looking at some new or recent releases as well, whatever seems like a good fit for Simply Scottish listeners. And if you have an idea of a book you'd like me to highlight, just get in touch with me, andrew@simplyscottish.com, or the contact form on our website, simplyscottish.com. Edinburgh in its Golden Age was written by William K. Ritchie in 1967, part of the extensive Then and There series published by Longman Group. This book is no longer in print, and the publisher Longman has since merged with Pearson Academic Press, so if you want to get your hands on a copy, you might have to do a little hunting. I noticed used copies online at places like Amazon and eBay, so it's definitely out there if you want to read the whole thing. I couldn't find a great deal of information about the book's author, William K. Ritchie. I know he wrote several titles in the same series, including Scotland in the Time of Wallace and Bruce, Scotland in the Time of the Covenanters, Mary Queen of Scots, the France of Louis XIV, and others. The thing I appreciate about his book, and why I think it's worth featuring, is that it's written to make you feel like you're visiting Edinburgh in the early 1800s. It's written to bring the capital city to life in all its early 19th century glory. It even suggests near the beginning that you have come to Edinburgh to visit friends in the city. The inside front cover contains a double-page map of Edinburgh from 1773, showing a layout of the city exactly as a visitor would have seen it at the time. You can see the Nor Loch bordering Edinburgh Castle, the intricate layout of the Old Town, and even the tidy modern layout of the New Town north of the Loch. In 1755, it was estimated that Edinburgh had over 57,000 inhabitants. By 1791, that figure had risen to 81,000. By all accounts, the city was crowded. The author quotes a visitor from England describing the city to a friend this way: "The High Street in Edinburgh is inhabited by a greater number of persons than in any street in Europe." Back in these days, Edinburgh had walls to keep invaders out, So homes in the old town were built close together for safety, and eventually they had to build up, adding more floors to the houses as they were needed. This also created many wynds, closes, and entries between the homes. A wynd is a lane, and a close is like an alley. Many of the closes were very steep and often named after former landowners, like Halkerson's Wynd and Getty's Entry, or landmarks like Flush Market Close and Playhouse Close. But although it was crowded in parts, Edinburgh by this time was being compared to the city of Athens in Greece because of its splendour and the concentration of great minds. The author again quotes the visitor from England. "You have seen the famous street at Lille in France, La Rue Royale, which is said to be the finest in Europe, but which I assure you is not to be compared either in length or breadth to the High Street at Edinburgh." Visitors could walk the length of the High Street from the castle right down to the royal residence of Holyrood House, and take in a number of important buildings on the way down, including the Tolbooth, Parliament Hall, St. Giles Cathedral, and the Royal Exchange. By the 1760s, the need for a new town became clear. Construction began in 1767 and would continue for about 60 years, with new tenants and businesses slowly moving in as each section was completed. George Drummond, a former Lord Provost of the city, was chosen to lead the project. The winner of the design contest was a young architect named James Craig. His plan was simple, yet fresh and elegant at the time. Basically, it was an orderly and spacious grid with three main streets about a mile in length, Queen Street, George Street, and Prince's Street, along with cross streets and space for squares like St. Andrew's Square and Charlotte Square. As part of the new scheme, the Norlock was drained, and bridges were built connecting the old and new parts of town. Many people plied their profession in Edinburgh. The city wasn't industrial like Glasgow and Birmingham, but was home more to craftsmen and artisans, bankers, solicitors, physicians, lords of session, schoolmasters, merchants, grocers, shipbuilders, brewers, and members of the nobility. Along the Water of Leith in the city's northeast corner, many mills made linen, snuff, and paper. Books were printed for the lawyers, university students, and pupils at school. Beer was also made in Leith. The building of the new town brought more work to the city in the form of masons, builders, carpenters, and plasterers. There was also the poorhouse for those who had no work or were too old to work, and some had the occupation of town beggar, and only those who had an official town badge were allowed to beg in the city. Others were sent back to their own town or village. Then there were the coddies, considered a most useful set of men. Their job? Basically anything anybody wanted or needed. Valet, errands, thief-catching, bodyguard, a guide, or even a bully. Sometimes referred to as the guardians of the city, Ritchie notes there were fewer robberies and less housebreaking in Edinburgh than other places, in part due to the presence of the coddies. In a few minutes, I'll share with you some excerpts detailing a visit to a house in the old town, and by comparison, one in the new town. First, back to music. We're going to hear brand new music from South Korea-born cellist Sua Lee. A celebrated chamber musician working in Scotland, Sua has been keen to bring more cello into contemporary traditional music. The cello, in fact, is the original Scottish folk rhythm section instrument. Famous Scots fiddlers of the 18th century, like Neil Gow, Peter Milne, and James Scott Skinner, were regularly accompanied by a cellist. The cello went out of fashion for a century or so, in favour of guitar, piano, and other instruments, but it's undergoing a revival in the folk world, thanks to the efforts of musicians like Sua, as well as Natalie Haas. The tune I'm playing is from Sua's latest album called Dialogues. It's called Baroque Suite, and features Donald Shaw of Capercaillie and Celtic Connections fame on the piano and the harmonium. You know, the Baroque style of music was popular during the years of Edinburgh's Golden Age, and you can bet it was still being played and enjoyed even as the city was expanding its borders at the turn of the 19th century. Let's enjoy Sua Lee on the cello with Baroque Suite. You're listening to Simply Scottish. This is an episode in our Off the Shelf series. The book we're looking at today is Edinburgh in its Golden Age by William K. Ritchie. And as I said, the author does a good job of bringing the city to life in all its late 18th and early 19th century magnificence. In chapter 4 of the book, author Ritchie bids us into the old town of the 18th century to go visit a friend. I'll read to you a few passages so you can get a feel for the journey. In the old town, the houses are all made of stone, brought from the many quarries in and around town. The roofs are covered with pan tiles. The most famous houses in Edinburgh are in the Lawn Market and High Street. Visitors gaze at them, wondering how it can be safe to live so high. Nowhere else in Britain are houses so tall. Some rise to 12 or 13 stories, though most commonly they're 9 and 10 stories. To reach your friend's house, you turn off the High Street, down a wind, so narrow that neighbours in the top stories can actually lean out and shake hands across it. You climb up a steep, narrow staircase where you might meet virtually anyone, colliding with a countess or tripping over a cottie. Reaching your friend's flat, you pull up and down the little ring that's attached to a notched piece of iron, called the risp or turlin pin, on the door. Bells and knockers are not yet in use. A maidservant opens the door and bids you into the parlour by way of a narrow, dimly lit hall. Your friend welcomes you and shows you around the house. Windows have no curtains, but have wooden shutters drawn across them. The rooms are quite small, with low ceilings. Some ceilings have elaborate designs in the plaster, but poorer tenants have only bare wooden beams full of cracks and holes, which also serve as the floor of the flat above. Some tenants have plaster walls, others prefer wooden panelling. Your friend may be considering putting up some of that recently invented wallpaper. Your friend, being more well-off, has some mahogany and walnut furniture from England and the Netherlands. Beds often fit into a recess in the wall to save space. There's a nice coal fire burning, but your friend has no lavatory, no bathroom, in the house. There is no running water in any of these houses. All water must be brought up in jugs and pitchers from the public wells in the street below. Instead of a bathroom, there are chamber pots, which are emptied out of the window into the street. The town council forbids this practice, but it still happens, and the streets are cleaned every morning except Sunday. You have a good visit with your friend, perhaps even staying the night. Then you bid farewell, for you have another friend to visit in the new town. I'll share an excerpt from that chapter in the book next. First, back to music with Edinburgh-based multi-instrumentalist Fraser Fifield. After 20 years playing with a host of well-known Scottish bands, including Wolfstone, Old Blind Dogs, Salsa Celtica, and Capercaillie, this is music from his debut solo album. The track is called Dark Reel, from the album Honestly Water. Thank you. So you're off to visit another friend in the new town of Edinburgh. Let me read again from Ritchie's book, Edinburgh in its Golden Age, Chapter 5, In the New Town. Your new town friend's house stands by itself. It's not a flat. It has three floors, an attic, and a basement below street level. Along the front of the house runs an iron railing. The main door has an elegant portico, and the window above the doorway has panels of glass shaped like a fan or a flower. All the houses on the street are the same height, by order of the town council. Most of the houses are made of honey-coloured sandstone, looking fresh and clean. The maidservant invites you into a large hallway that's well lit with a skylight. Doors open off on both sides to a dining room and a study. Your friend gives you a tour of the house, leading the way up the broad stone staircase with decorated iron balustrade, and shows you through drawing rooms, bedrooms, dressing rooms, and even an attic nursery where the children play. The main rooms of the house are very spacious and full of light coming through tall windows. The ceilings are high and covered with intricate designs in the plaster. Portraits and paintings line the walls. The windows have curtains of velvet. Rugs and carpets cover the polished wooden floors. You enjoy the warmth from the marble fireplace in the living room. There's even a music room. But even though this is one of the most splendid and up-to-date houses in Britain around 1800, it has no bathroom. Only later were these made out of small rooms and large cupboards under the stairs. There is, however, running water in the kitchen, though it has to be heated at the range. Maids handle laundry in the basement, and coal is lowered through a manhole in the pavement into the coal cellar below. You have to be well off to live in a home like this in Edinburgh. In the 1770s, for example, a home in St. Andrew's Square cost nearly £2,000, or about £100 a year to rent. Living in the new town had some disadvantages too. People missed the friendliness of the old town. They complained of cold east winds and the gusts from the north that blew off their hats and forced them to clutch at the railings sometimes. And many who worked in the old town had to hoof it, as they say, and had quite a walk to work. After the new town, the city continued to expand toward the Water of Leith, around Calton Hill, and southwards too. Lots of bridges went up to connect parts of the city, and the mound was created across the drained Nor Loch to directly connect the new town with the High Street. New public buildings went up too. Register House was home to important documents. New buildings went up for theatre, schools and observatories. It was, to be sure, an exciting time for Scotland's capital city. Ritchie goes on in his book to describe what Edinburgh citizens ate and drank, what they wore, their time at school, and their games and pastimes. He also profiles some famous sons of the city, including David Hume, Adam Smith, Alan Ramsay, Sir Walter Scott, and Thomas Muir. Ritchie also tells a story that reveals the darker side of Edinburgh in this time period. It's the story of the body snatchers, Dr. Robert Knox, and murderers Burke and Hare. By the 19th century, Edinburgh had grown famous for the training of doctors and surgeons. There were so many medical students, it was hard to keep up a supply of bodies for dissecting in anatomy lectures. Men known as resurrectionists, or body snatchers, would prowl cemeteries under cover of night and steal bodies of people newly buried. One surgeon, Dr. Robert Knox, always seemed to have a constant supply of fresh corpses. Then a few of the bodies he worked on were recognized by students, and eventually two body snatchers from the West Port were arrested. The trial began in late 1829. It's one of the most famous in Scottish legal history. I won't tell you the rest of the story here, but suffice it to say it definitely opened residents' eyes to what life had become in the old town of Edinburgh. By this time, Edinburgh's golden age was drawing to a close. The Burke and Hare crimes may have been one reason the city tore down the slums that had grown up in the old town. Sir Walter Scott died in 1832, robbing the city of one of its most famous residents. Some people moved to London or other parts of the world, leaving their mansions behind to be turned into hotels, shops, and nursing homes. The railway came in 1831, eventually brought right into the heart of the city through Princes Street Gardens. Though its golden age was over, Edinburgh continued to be a major financial centre and a hub for business and tourism. Today you can take in the glories of the Old Town as well as the New Town, and all the parts of Edinburgh that make it an amazing city still. I'm proud of my hometown of Edinburgh. I was born at Elsie Ingalls Memorial Hospital and spent years of my childhood in Edinburgh suburbs before moving to the United States. I still have a lot of fond memories of the city that I cherish. Richie's book seems originally geared for the student, because at the end there's a few pages titled Things to Do, with suggestions for assignments and further learning. One of the ideas is this: Edinburgh's new streets were called after famous people and events. Find out how the streets in your town got their names. That sounds like a fun assignment anyone can do. He also lists other books about Edinburgh and Scotland, as well as a glossary of words he uses in the book, like blunderbuss, an old-fashioned short handgun, or firkin, a small barrel, or posset, hot spiced milk curdled with ale or wine. No doubt this book was used by students at school or purchased by tourists interested in learning more about Edinburgh in this time period. So I think it's a good book for you and I to have on the shelf. Well, that concludes this episode. If you'd like to hear the first installment of Off the Shelf, where I highlight Sir Fitzroy MacLean's great book, Scotland, A Concise History, it's available instantly to listeners who subscribe to our new Patreon portal. As a reminder, you'll get bonus episodes, articles that can't be found anywhere else, and other benefits in return for a small monthly sponsorship of Simply Scottish. Help me reach more listeners and put out more episodes by joining the clan today. Go to patreon.com/simplyscottish to get the details. That's patreon.com/simplyscottish. Well, let's close with music from Scottish harpist and composer Corina Hewitt. I'll never get tired of playing this Robert Burns song, A Fond Kiss. With saxophone played by Phil Bancroft, here's Corina now. Until next time, be of good cheer. I'm Andrew McDermott. Thanks for listening.
Simply Scottish is hosted and produced by Andrew McDermott. Show content, copyright, Simply Scottish Media. All music is used with consent of copyright holders. Continue your Simply Scottish experience at simplyscottish.com. Thanks for listening.
A fond kiss, and then we sever. A farewell, and then forever. Deep in heart wrung tears, I'll pledge thee. Warring sighs and groans, I'll wage thee. Who shall say that fortune grieves him, while the star of hope she leaves him? Me, nay, cheerful twinkle lights me. Dark despair around benights me. I'll ne'er blame my partial fancy. Nathan could resist my Nancy, but to see her was to love her. Love but her, and love forever. Had we never loved, say kindly, had we never loved, say blindly, never met or never parted. ne'er been broken hearted. Fare thee weel, thou first and fairest. Fare thee weel, thou best and dearest. Thine be ilka joy and treasure, peace, enjoyment, love and pleasure. Sighs and groans away.